As a pastor, one of the things you're always trying to do is to convince people that God is powerful and can handle any problem that you have. And we go to the Bible to demonstrate that, and so we make special emphasis to show people the strength and the mighty hand of God, how Jesus Christ, for instance, healed and how he cast out demons and how he saved people whose lives seemed hopeless at the time. And I think sometimes people think that that happened, therefore, in a far off and distant place, and forget that God is still doing that. And every town, in every age, and every day, God is still delivering, he's still rescuing, he's still saving. And so this morning, we want to bring two people to the platform, Robert Locklear and Wayne Jackson, two friends that I have met through Celebrate Recovery. And their testimonies are dramatic in some ways, but when you think about what God can do, they're fairly common. And so before they come, will you stand and greet those around you this morning? And all right, let them know you're glad they're here. Will you make my friend Robert Locklear welcome today? Will you come?
Can you hear me? All right, I made it work. All right. Good morning, church. What a blessing and an honor it is to be here in the house of the Lord. You know, and let me just say that, you know, as I give my testimony today, it's not about what I've been able to do, but it's what God has been able to do in a broken, wretched soul like me. Okay. In June of 2013, I came to from an alcohol and drug-fueled binge in a Greene County jail cell. I realized this was the second time I had been in this cell in the past month. My thoughts went something like this. This can't be real. It must be some kind of sick dream. How did a nice guy like me end up in a place like this? Just a few weeks ago, I was a seemingly successful physician with a thriving practice and everything a man could ask for. How could this be happening to me? Then it hit me like a ton of bricks. I did this to myself. This whole ordeal might have made sense if I was trying to destroy my life. If that was the case, I would have been a huge success. But no, that wasn't the case at all, was it? I was doing my best to survive and to succeed. Of course I was. No person in his right mind would have made the choices I made, would have chosen the path of destruction I had found myself on. It is impossible to describe the degree of despair I felt and the level of pain I was in. I felt utterly alone and lost. There was no one around to comfort me. It was just me in that 12 by 12 cell. I remembered calling on God numerous times in the midst of scrapes, and it seemed like he always brought me through. But this time was different. I had reached the end of my rope, and certainly he knew that too. If I called to him now, why would he even answer me? I had felt his presence in my life numerous times, pulling me towards him, and I had always resisted. Even after the times I promised him I would change if he just helped me one more time, I always turned my back on him. I felt too ashamed to ask again. I just knew he would say something like, "You hypocrite, look at you now. After all I've done for you, you expect me to be there for you when you have nowhere else to turn? Well, you can just forget it." But part of me also knew that was just my shame talking. I realized something. It was either God or it was nothing. He was the answer or there was none. So I prayed what felt like my most sincere prayer I had ever prayed. I promised that if he got me out of jail with his help, I would turn my life over to him. And lo and behold, soon after, miracles began to happen. A few days later, the judge released me to go to rehab. Looking back, I can definitely see the hand of God at work. You see, the judge had released me a month earlier to go to rehab, but despite his warnings and the terrible consequences hanging over my head, I had left rehab to go get high. God had obviously softened the judge's heart, because I would not have trusted me again so soon. But this time I was ready to receive God's help. I spent 90 days in rehab, which is also where I asked Christ into my heart. I leaned on the word of the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 5:17. "Therefore, if you are in Christ, you are a new creation. Old things have passed away. New things have come." I was raised in rural North Carolina mostly by my grandparents. My mom lived next door and was involved in my life. I never really knew my dad. He died from drug and alcohol-related consequences. My grandparents were good, God-fearing people and raised me in a Southern Baptist church. I have a lot of fond memories of growing up in that church. I can remember countless times feeling drawn to turn my life over to Christ. But looking back, I believed if I did, I would end up with a life that was boring and not any fun. I wanted to be successful, have lots of money, and enjoy the pleasures life had to offer. I didn't think that I would be happy with the Christian life, so I thought about blazing my own path. In rehab, I realized I had a lot of resentments, but none greater than those towards my mom. I never really felt close to mom. When I was about 8 years old, she married a man who was abusive and later became addicted to drugs. There would be times after being physically assaulted that she would promise to leave him, but a few days later she would always go back. My pre-adolescent mind could not fathom her reasoning. She soon allowed me to go live with my grandparents full time. However, my younger brother continued to live with her, and I believe she loved my brother and this man more than she loved me. And because I was very good at holding a grudge, I refused to forgive her even after she changed, got a divorce, and tried to get close to me. The counselors in rehab helped me to see how destructive these resentments were. I thought I was hurting her, but I was really just hurting myself, worst of all. I came to realize that I used those resentments as excuses to continue my destructive behavior for over 20 years. My reasoning was that I deserved to get high because of what she did to me. I also told myself anyone would get high if they'd been through what I had been through. I was told that I could never stay clean and sober if I didn't forgive her. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. But I learned something, that forgiveness is not a feeling, it's a choice. If I was willing to make that choice, God would change my heart. That night I called her up and I told her that I had been harboring this resentment towards her all these years, but that I forgave her for what happened. She cried and I cried. She explained that she did what she did because she was young and thought she was doing what was best for me. She had become pregnant with my sister and didn't think she could take care of her family without this man. You know, for the first time I could see things from her perspective. Just like me, through all my mistakes, she had done the best she could do with what she had. Years later, God has indeed changed my heart. We are extremely close today. In rehab, I also realized that the thing that I grieved the most was my grandmother's death. Truthfully, I hadn't really begun to grieve. When she passed, I plunged deeper into my destructive habits to escape the pain. I felt very guilty when she passed suddenly in 2010. For one, I had not been the son I should have been. I was too preoccupied with my life to appreciate her. Often I didn't answer her phone calls, and I didn't visit like I should have. I realized I felt too ashamed of my lifestyle, and I knew she wouldn't approve of it. Talking to her and seeing her convicted me of that, so I avoided her. She had said she didn't feel well a few months before she passed. I didn't take her complaints seriously, though. So when she died, I felt like I could have done more. After all, I was a doctor. I should have seen this coming. I could have encouraged her and supported her to get the help she needed. But of course, I was too preoccupied with my own life to notice what was happening with her. Recovery helped me realize a few things. It has allowed me to come to peace with what has happened with my grandmother. The outcome may not have been any different no matter how much I was involved. And I know she's in a better place. As I grieved over her passing, I never really looked at what was best for her. All I could think about was that I missed her being here. You see, it was selfish. I learned how to make amends to her. I wrote her a letter to her sharing how much I love her, how much I appreciate her always being there for me, how much I miss her, and how sorry I am for not appreciating her more. Last spring, I was able to share these things with her at her grave. I cried like a baby, but felt a great release. I know she and God forgive me, and I can have self-forgiveness as well. God's plan was working in my life before I ever realized it. Sarlena became pregnant near the height of my drug addiction. Our daughter was born immediately after I got out of rehab. She was named Haven Hope to symbolize what we prayed was a new beginning. I realized that if Haven had not been present during the hardest period of my life, I would not have been able to stay clean. I had lost my medical license and had no job. Sarlena had to work a lot just so we could survive without my income. I had gone from working 60 hours a week to doing nothing. But by the grace of God, I had Haven to take care of while Lena worked. See, God had this all set up before I even went to rehab. While I was lost in my addiction, He had it all planned out. Even after rehab, God worked His miraculous hand to keep me clean. One day after being clean about 6 months, I wanted to use terribly. I went to an old drug dealer's house and got to get some drugs. I pulled up in the driveway hoping he would come out, but for some reason I was afraid to get out of the car. I sat there for a few minutes, and when no one came out, I left disappointed. On my way down the street, a man standing in a nearby yard flagged me down. I rolled down my window hoping that he had what I was looking for. He told me he knew who I was and that I didn't want to do this. He said God had told him to stop me to talk to me. He shared his story of a long history of drug abuse and how God had given him several years clean and sober. I listened to what he shared, and his words convicted me, and I've never wanted to use drugs since. Amen. About a year and a half into recovery, I was sentenced to 2 years in prison for distribution of drugs and insurance fraud. After the shock wore off, I was angry at God. I thought, God, how can you allow me to go to prison? Haven't I been doing what I'm supposed to be doing for the past 16 months? But of course, I conveniently wanted to look over the prior 43 years, okay? I thought, I have turned my life over to Christ, and now I have to face this. For the first time, I have the opportunity to be the father to Haven that I've always wanted to be. And now I have to abandon her for 2 whole years. I went to a lot of meetings and talked with a lot of friends in recovery. They told me that, yes, Robert, this sucks. But today you have a relationship with God who loves you and He wants what's best for you. He could have kept you from going to prison, but obviously it is in His plan for you to go to prison. You may not like it or understand it, but have the faith that it is for the best. And since this is His will for you, go in with the attitude that you will get the most out of this experience. Look for every opportunity to grow closer to Him and to be of service to others. One day at a time, this too shall pass. I talked, I listened, I cried, but by sharing, I gained acceptance of the situation to a degree I never could have imagined. And again, God worked miracles. The judge recommended I go to one of 2 prison camps near home. But instead, I ended up in a facility in West Virginia that offered a 9-month residential drug program. By completing the program, I got a year off my sentence. The sentence I received from the judge was the minimum required to participate in the program. If I'd gotten one day less from the judge in 24 months, I would have not qualified for the program, and I would have been in prison a lot longer. It may sound astonishing to hear that my prison experience was one of the best years of my life. My relationship with Christ grew exponentially there. Because of life's distractions, I realized that I would not have been able to develop the foundation as a Christian and in recovery I have now, if not for being set aside for this period of time. In fact, I was much happier that year in prison than at least 5 years before I ever got arrested. Of course, I would have never chosen this path for myself, though, which hammers a truth I have come to understand. I have no idea what is good for me, but God does. In prison, I was introduced to Celebrate Recovery. There was a prison ministry that came once a month to do the meeting. I loved the idea of a Christ-centered 12-step recovery program. In fact, it was the 12 steps that drew me to Christ. A friend in a 12-step meeting told me about Celebrate Recovery here in Greenville and invited me to attend. It has been more than I ever dreamed it could be. I've been able to unify my recovery and my Christianity with brothers and sisters who understand brokenness. I have been able to involve my family in the recovery process. You see, we learned that addiction is a family illness. It affects everyone who cares about me and that I love. They need healing and recovery just like I do. I still attend other 12-step meetings besides CR, but by doing so, I can share my recovery as gifted through Christ. It's another opportunity for me to grow closer to Him and to share Christ with others. Recovery has given me what I've always been searching for: love, peace, joy, and serenity. I thought I couldn't find those things by serving God. I believed it would lead to a life of boredom and dissatisfaction. So I sought it in what I thought would fulfill those needs, and I failed miserably. Only when I surrendered to God did I win. I have achieved a glimpse of that mind-boggling paradox we are faced with. Life is difficult, but God wants us to be happy. The answer lies not in whatever the circumstances may be, but in my relationship to God and others. When I am doing what He asked me to do and serving others instead of focusing on myself, God gives me peace and joy. All the circumstances are just His way of getting me to rely on Him and to focus on others. As James says, count it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, lacking nothing. In closing, I will leave you with the words of Richard Rohr in Breathing Underwater, Spirituality in the 12 Steps. What humiliated and wounded addict cannot look on the image of the crucified Christ and see himself or herself? Who would not rush to surrender and communion with such a crucified God, who against all expectations shares in our powerlessness, our failure, and our indignity? Who would not find himself revealed, renamed, and released inside of such a God? Thank you. Bless you. Thank you. Thank you.
Will you welcome our brother in Christ, Wayne Jackson?
Morning, everybody. My name's Wayne. I'm a grateful recovering drug addict, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank you guys for letting me be here today. They tell me that I keep what I have by giving it away. And, you know, I get emotional about my recovery, so bear with me. And the reason I do, when I think about the miracle that God has wrought in my life today, not a big deal for God, but a big deal for me, I get overcome with emotion. You know, my mother was a drug addict. She wasn't the garden variety drug addict. She worked every day and she went to church. And she took us to church. She had a terrible choice of men. There was five of us, and we lived in the housing projects. She worked two jobs. But, you know, as a child, I couldn't understand how a mother could be so loving and so kind one day and be so full of violence and rage the next. I didn't understand withdrawals. I was a child. So, you know, at around 12 or 13 years old, I had a sister that froze to death in a car accident due to drugs and alcohol. And, you know, I was too tall, too skinny. I had bad teeth, and I didn't fit in anywhere. So I started running around with a crew that, you know, that smoked pot and drank and got into a lot of vandalism, and I fit in. I felt like I was somebody. And, you know, a couple of years later, I left home. I had a little sister that was really sick from a heart defect, no doubt related to my mother's drug and alcohol and other things. And she was really sick, and I just got out of the way, and I left home and started selling drugs and hanging out with the wrong bunch. But I met my wife, and 17-year-old, we were married. And, you know, at that point, I didn't realize that I suffered from the same mental illness as my mother. I knew I was different. You know, I was kicking chairs and cussing teachers in elementary school, and I'd never used drugs or alcohol. But when I smoked a lot of marijuana, I got a union job by accident, insurance, good money, kept my wife at home the first 5 years of my son's life, and I, you know, I worked hard. I worked every dime hour of overtime that I could work, but I smoked a lot of marijuana. I smoked it morning, noon, and night, and it kept me halfway on the beam. I would fall off sometimes, but it kept me halfway on the beam. And then I put my wife through college, and she got a really good job, and the money started coming and flowing, and I started the guys that said I couldn't hang out with them and play pool because my wife wouldn't let me. It's because I didn't have the money to, but that's what I started to do, and I started hanging around downtown Johnson City and started fooling around with cocaine. And about 6 or 8 months into that, my life started coming apart. They had an employee assistance program. My son was 8 years old, and I said, this is not happening to me, and I checked into treatment. 2 weeks into treatment, this was the first time in 15 years that drugs and alcohol had been completely removed from me. And I had a psychotic break. It was terrible, and I started hallucinating, and they had to put me up, and they moved me over to a psych ward, and a psychiatrist told me that I suffered from manic depression, that I was bipolar, and prescribed some medication. I spent 2 more weeks. And they sent me home. They told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days, take the medication, and follow up. You know, I tried, and the cigarette smoke, and I didn't feel like it was for me. And I said to myself, I said, you know, cocaine was my problem. I've done real well smoking marijuana and drinking. You know, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink on the weekends. And so I continued to drink, and I continued to smoke pot. And everything I touched turned to gold. New houses, 2 new houses, 15 new cars, Mexican vacations up and down the East Coast, me and my son traveling together, family. For a boy with an 8th grade education from the projects, I felt like I had arrived, that I was doing what I was supposed to do. But there was a time during this period that I was rock climbing, and I was down here at Paint Rock. Drinking moonshine, smoking pot, and jumping off a cliff with a rope, and almost got killed. And I heard about a Christian organization in Bluffville, Tennessee, David Collins. You may have heard of him. I wasn't really interested in the Christian aspect. They said David was the best in the business, and that's who I wanted to train under. So I went to a 3-day seminar and climbing trip with David and Collins Expeditions. And the night after the classroom work, they had a Bible study. And the Bible study was on Isaiah 43:2. When thou walkest through the waters, they won't overflow thee, and through the fire, you won't be burned. And I laid awake that night in my tent, and I realized I didn't have that protection, that I wasn't saved. The next morning, I was supposed to do a lead climb. I told David, I said, I'm not going up there. He said, why not? I said, I'm a wretched person, and if I die today, I'm going to hell. He said, are you ready to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior today, Wayne? I said, I am. I got on my knees, and I gave my heart to Jesus, and something happened to me underneath them hemlock trees that day. The way of the world left me that day. Yeah. But you know, before Celebrate Recovery, and they didn't have a way, they couldn't tell me how to get rid of the mental illness. They didn't tell me how to deal with my resentments, the hate that I had for my brother and the loss that I had for my sister. I felt responsible for because she was supposed to be watching me the night she died. But I was high taking ginseng seeds and been hallucinating. And they didn't tell me how to get rid of it. And the people on my job, they started persecuting me and making fun of me and doing everything in the world because I was trying to live a Christian life. And I tried, and it went on for a year or so. And I talked to people about it. And I talked to my priest. Well, you got to pray for them. They told me that I was worse white as snow. They told me that my sins were as far as the east is from the west. They told me to sin no more. You know, and the people at work that were in church, the best they could do was tell me where to go to church, how to worship, what Bible to read, and then they told me how to vote. And, you know, I started drinking. I started sneaking and drinking. And 3 months later, I showed up at a Bible study drunk. David Collins had put me on a pedestal of what Jesus could do for a drug addict, and I failed miserably. He told me, he said, Wayne, he said, don't you ever, he said, please don't turn your back on God. He said, it's hard telling what he'll allow happen to you. And those words would resonate in me. At 39-year-old, 3 years later, I'm downtown Johnson City. And the people, they stopped persecuting me when I stopped serving Christ. They wanted to be around me. They lifted me. They liked me coming back to the fold. And I was downtown Johnson City, and I was drinking, and I was playing pool. And we went outside to smoke a joint, and a boy had a crack pipe, and I decided that I was drunk, you know. I tried just a little bit of that. And it was I won't go into the details of that, but, you know, I knew I was messed up. My son had went off to college, and I felt like, you know, I'd never had a chance just to do what I wanted to do. And 8 months later, I woke up in a plastic cage from a coma, covered in feces. I was 109 pounds, and I didn't know how I got there. My bones, all I could see was bones and skin. I had tubes running out of every part of my body, and I didn't know how I got there. The next morning, my little wife, she come in at the doctor, and she said, he's awake. I said, well, he's awake, but he's very sick. And if he might be able to walk, if he survives, he might be able to walk in the mall, but he'll wear oxygen. And I was listening to this, and I couldn't talk. And she unzipped the case and said, what you see may be what you get, ma'am. I was in a diaper, and you know, she was standing over top of me. She unzipped the cage. I had these boxing gloves on. I fought, and she was crying. The tears were flowing. She was saying, baby, tell me what to do. I couldn't tell her. I couldn't talk. But, you know, they whisked me away to a nursing home. And I started to get a little bit better. Started gaining a little weight. I still had a feeding tube. And I thought, you know, I can do this. I had lost my job. They had fired me from my job. I said, I can do this. I missed 9 days in 22 years. I got sick. We got a union, and they can't keep me fired. I'll get back on my job, and I'll put all this stuff back together. I'm Wayne Jackson. I can do this. The day they checked me out of the nursing home, there were two guys standing outside with long hair looking at me, and I said, what is this? And it was a drug task force, and evidently during my foolishness, I don't remember, but I had sold a couple of pieces of crack downtown, and now I'm facing 16 years in prison. I had to sell the house that I worked for, my wife's house also. I had to cash our retirement to keep me out of the penitentiary. I was $100,000 in debt. I'd spent $25,000 out of a stock market account before my wife could turn around. So I left. When I got in front of the judge, my lawyer, he said, you know, if he's a drug dealer, he's the worst one I ever saw. He showed a picture of me in that coma and, you know, and my financials. But the judge had mercy on me, and I got 8 years probation. It's okay. You know, and that stuff started spinning in my head again. My mental illness started coming back, and I couldn't stay still, and I couldn't sleep, and I was going out of my brain. I thought, well, you know, alcohol's never done nothing to me. even though I was drunk the first time I injected cocaine, I was drunk when I smoked crack, but alcohol had never done to me, so I continued to drink. And because of the felonies, now, a lot of you are not going to understand how a man could just keep on and on and on letting drugs and alcohol destroy his life. And then some of you will understand completely, but, you know, because of the felonies, I couldn't get a job doing anything but digging holes. And I hurt my back. And I went to the doctor, and they gave me radiotherapy. They did all the things they don't do. And he said, well, there's nothing I can do for your back. I'm going to put you on morphine and Lortabs. And I didn't say, whoa, I'm a drug addict. You know, I still didn't realize that I wasn't admitting that I was. I said, well, bring them on. And for 2 years, I did what was right, and I felt great. And I drank, and I partied, and I worked harder than anybody around me. For an addict, it has a different effect. And one night, somebody had just mentioned it, the obsession. Drunk, I go to Google, good friend Google, and I type in how to inject morphine. In about 3 months, my life went to garbage. And somebody gave me a piece of Suboxone. I'm going to try to get through this. They gave me a piece of Suboxone. It helped my dope sickness, so I went to a Suboxone clinic and got on Suboxone. And I thought, when I took it, I was dope sick. I was sweating and been up for 5 days, and an hour later I could have played a game of tennis. And I said, well, I can do this. They don't drug test for alcohol. This will work for me, and I'm going to be just fine. And they told me to get a sponsor, go to meetings, and work the steps, and I wouldn't have to come as much. So I come down here to Greenville and found out where the meetings were and went back to parents and said, yeah, I'm doing every bit of that. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And they thought I was doing good. And when I left there, I would go to the drug store and to the beer store. Every day I started drinking. Whatever time I started drinking, I would drink until I passed out. I was so miserable, and I hated, and I hated, and I hated the people that I worked for firing me the way they did. I hated the drug task force for setting me up the way they did. There was a friend of mine in this room that had some property by the river, and I would sit down there, and I would plot my revenge, and I would hate, and I would hate, and I hated my mother. My mother had done some things when I was in a coma to my wife that I just said I will never forgive her. And I hated these people, and I would call them up, and I did some terrible things. And I was miserable. So I'm high on October 23rd of 2015. I'm in Johnson City high on. I'm taking Suboxone. I'm taking Klonopin. And I've got about 15 beers in me. And I put a crack pipe back in my mouth. You know, at this point, before that, I want to go back. I had drank and drank and drank and drank and drank, and I wanted to die. And one day I come home so drunk and so full of rage, and I cussed my wife. I called her everything in the book. And, you know, she got on my chest. And she said, Wayne, I need to die or you need to die because I can't leave you. And I thought to myself, she's going to commit suicide to get out of this. And I said, God, please, please kill me. I said, You have me dead. Why didn't you kill me? Why'd you keep me here? What am I doing here? What good am I to anybody? Let them be happy. I drive down to 107 cutoff and them dump trucks would be rolling. I just wanted the guts just to pull myself and up and under one. Let it be an accident. Just let them be happy. I have caused so much pain and misery. God, why have you kept me here? October 23rd, 2015. I'm downtown. I'm smoking crack. And on the way home, I realized I was going to die. And you know something? When I realized I was going to die, I didn't want to die. My heart was, I got a defibrillator pacemaker that completely controls my heart due to that crack overdose. And my heart was coming out of my chest. It's 4 a.m. My wife's working third shift. I'm trying to beat her home because I want her to know that I've been this stupid. I'm throwing up in my coat because I'm paranoid. I think that every cop in town is following me. I'm going to go to prison. I'm throwing up in my coat. I get home and I put my head under the covers. I prayed for God to help me. I begged him. I said, I don't know what you want from me, God, but this ain't it. I don't want to die. Please help me. And I go back up to the clinic and I tell the counselor, he said, how you doing, Dad? I told him, I got honest. I said, I'm not doing any good. I've been smoking, I've been drinking, now I'm smoking crack and I'm going to die and I need help. He told me to follow the suggestions. Why don't you follow the suggestions? So I started going to a lot of meetings. October 23rd, I'm going to say it again, 2015, I'm falling down drunk, smoking crack, on Suboxone, on Klonopin. October 24th, the morning of October 24th, I begged for God to help me. And I didn't have to have a drink or a drug all day, and I ain't had to have one since. Like Robert, you know, through this program, and no doubt it's God sent, it gave me a way to deal with those resentments. It gave me a way. You know, the first three steps is I can't, he can, I'm going to let him. When I finally decided to turn my will and my life over to the care of God and quit doing it my way, quit doing it Wayne Jackson's way, quit doing it my way, evidently, my best thinking had got me in the condition that I was in, and I had nothing. But working through the steps, Roberts helped me, and we sat down under them oak trees over at the Doak House one day, and I let him know all of it. I opened the blinds all the way. I let all the light in. I didn't hold nothing back. I don't know, you know, when we left that day, Robert went left and I went right. And he must have took that garbage with him because it ain't bothered me since. Haven't bothered me since. And through the eighth and ninth step, when I wrote the list of all the people that I had harmed, become willing to make amends to them all. And then in the ninth step, made direct amends to such people, except when they injured them or others. I had turned a whole town against me on Facebook. Town of Jonesboro. I wasn't allowed in the hardware store. Wasn't allowed in the cafe. I started writing letters because these people, a lot of them would have called the police if I showed up on their door. They started to send me letters back and they was forgiving me and telling me that they loved me. And through that, I hadn't forgive. I hadn't forgive. I hadn't forgive my mother. Even through the steps, I said, well, first, I said, well, I thought when I came to the program that I would quit using drugs and alcohol and my life would get better. I didn't know that I was going to have to find a spiritual basis for my life. So, I said, well, I forgive her, but I can't go around her. I said, it's too toxic. I won't go back. But then when I got into the eighth and ninth step, and to hate her for that one thing, and I was still hating her, evidently, I had to forget about her working two jobs so I could wear decent clothes. I had to forget about her sacrificing so I wouldn't get free lunch in high school and be made fun of. I forgot about all the time she prayed by my bedside and when I'd have an ear. I forgot about all those things. I hated her for that one thing. Well, about 8 months ago, I went and seen my mother in a nursing home, and I'll see her this week. And we laugh and we joke. And I don't know what that's done for her, but I sure know what it's done for me. Now, Celebrate Recovery, when I told you before I had no way, it was looked at as a moral failing. What was wrong with me? But if I didn't sin no more, I could get better, and it doesn't work that way. Celebrate Recovery is sent by God. God give us addicts, us people with hang-ups, habits, and hurts, a way to come to Christ and get rid of the things that kept us high and kept us drunk and kept us miserable all our lives. At least that's what's happened for me. I I don't know a whole lot about a whole lot. I still have problems. I still struggle sometimes. I got a problem right now. I'll just share with you right now. I haven't forgiven my brother for the abuse, the mental and the physical abuse that he put on me. He was 12 years older than me, and he was a terrible person. He died. I had a 12-year-old sister that died with a heart defect directly result of my mother's habits. My 17-year-old sister froze to death in a car accident due to drugs and alcohol. I had a 50-year-old sister that overdosed on Xanax and alcohol. And my brother died 8 months ago, drunk and alone. That's a lot of sad stuff, ain't it? A lot of sad stuff. Don't be sad for me today, y'all. Don't be sad for me. Be happy for me. I'm not going to die that way. If I die today, I'm going to die happy, joyous, and free and serving God. That's the way I'm going to die today. I don't know a whole lot about a whole lot, but I know three things for sure. I'm God's child. He's my Father, and if I trust in Him, I have nothing to fear. Thank you guys for letting me come here today.